Basketball Podcast, Quick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Happy Super Bowl hangover day. Matt Moore on the Skype lines. How are you?
I'm fine. Yesterday was a very odd Super Bowl experience for me. We're new to town, and we live kind of north of everybody, so I don't know enough people to have, like, a Super Bowl party yet.
Yeah.
And it changes when you've got kids, too. And so, and then, like, my wife had a bunch of stuff going on, and I tried to get, like, a run-in. And so, it's just kind of like, we made chili and kind of watched the game, and that was about it. How are you doing, Niners fan? How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm surprisingly okay. Like, I was really nervous during the game. I was really nervous leading up to the game. And then Kaepernick throws incomplete pass on fourth and goal, and you see they're not going to throw, like, a defensive holding penalty or pass interference or whatever it should have been. And I was just like, ah. That sucks. Oh, well. I wonder if I have to work. I wonder if I'm working in the morning or the afternoon tomorrow. Like, that's really where my mind went. I was like, oh, I just don't like it. I would have loved for them to win, but it really wasn't going to change my life.
You're disgraced to pathetic, irrational fandom everywhere.
Yeah, no, I have. And it makes me sound like a snob, and maybe I am, but it's just like, I don't know. I mean, I'm 31 years old. Like, I feel like shouldn't be living and dying with a group of guys that don't know I exist.
Right.
I don't know. It's a weird happy medium, I think, because I really wanted them to win, and then they didn't, and I'm just like, I'm the type of person, like, I have a really hard time caring about things I can't control. Not caring about them, but, like, I guess really getting, like, upset about things I can't control. Like, I wasn't on the field. I'm not going to catch that pass, you know? Like, so how can I affect the outcome? I can't. You know, I don't let myself get too worked up about it. It was kind of funny, though. You mentioned the kids thing. Is we were at a friend's house, and they've got kids, and a couple other people brought a kid over. And so, like, they're in the other room playing, and what happened? Something happened. Oh, I think it was Crabtree's touchdown. And I jump up, I'm like, holy, and then I realize there are kids in the other room, I'm like, ah! So that kind of affected me too. I couldn't get too into it, but normally I'd be like jumping and screaming. I like really had to like watch my language, which is hard for me. So that was a different experience. And this was like 2 weeks in a row, or two games in a row where I felt like I couldn't really yell. Because this time there were kids in the other room, and they're like 3 and 4 years old. I mean, they're young kids. And then the week before, my lady was like had fallen asleep on the couch during the NFC Championship game. And so like when they got the final defensive stop, I like jumped up and then like yelled without making a noise and like did a huge fist pump, and that actually woke her up. So like. Just my
was it
my
like a sonic. Was it? Were you like Guile?
Yeah, I was like, it was like a sonic boom, and then I did this weird like on my head kick, kicked the dog across the room. No, it was like this weird body spasm that was felt throughout the building. So yeah, that was my Super Bowl Sunday. It was fun though. I really did have fun. The whole power outage thing was hilarious. And the game was
fun.
How
great was CBS in handling that, by the way?
Yeah, that was
fantastic coverage.
I can't even imagine what that must have been like for a producer or director of the broadcast. Like,
so
oh,
I
but
I knew it because I would have said, "What just happened? What just happened?"
By the way, Phil, 25 minutes of power outage. That was great, and it was a fun game. Like the 49ers got down early. And, like, that was kind of a bummer. Then they worked their way back. They had a chance to win it. They didn't win it. It was a fun game. That's what I wanted. I wanted a fun game.
I wondered a lot, since your very rational and calm and mature reaction last night that I want to aspire to, I wondered, like, how I would react were the Chiefs to ever make it to the Super Bowl and lose. I was trying to debate. My initial reaction was, I would just be happy they made it because that means they won a playoff game.
Right.
Which is more than they've done since I hit puberty. So it would be kind of a big upgrade there. But then it's like, well, yeah, but if they make it that far, it's also one where, you know, we're coming up on I'm a third generation fan, and like my grandfather saw the '63 championship and my dad saw the '63 championship. I, of course, did not. And I'm like, I would only maybe have one chance. Yeah. Like,
but that's another thing. It's like, the team's won five, and I've seen four of them in my life, and I like vividly remember the last three that they won. So it's kind of like it sounds very snobbish, and it's kind of just a jerk reaction. It's like, well, I have seen them win a couple.
You get to see that's the thing though. It's like that kind of stuff, that kind of attitude, I'm okay with from like Lakers fans and stuff like that, where it's like, I'm not really bothered that we lost a championship. I mean, we have 17.
Right, exactly. Like that's the thing. Is like, it's weird to me when there are the Celtics and Lakers fans who are like just devastated by it. I'm like, you guys have seen quite a few,
right? And you're gonna be back in like
within right, the next, like, like I, 7 I mean, years. That's the, fine. Yeah, the 49ers franchise is not hurting, and that's the thing. Like, I going into the season, I didn't think they were gonna make the Super Bowl. I thought they were probably like a second round and out team. So they exceeded my expectations, and in the process, have a franchise quarterback now. Like, I really like Kaepernick. I wasn't crazy about him until his 10 starts or 11 starts, whatever it's been. And now I really like him, and I think he's going to be awesome in the future. And so, like, I'm excited. Like, it was like this weird transition stage. Now, if they lose it next year, who knows? Maybe I'll be breaking tables and stuff.
Yeah, I was happy for the Ravens, just from the not for any of the personality aspects, which we won't go into. But I do like Joe Flacco a lot, and it's weird because in the NBA, I very much like the fact that the NBA. I really enjoy the fact that whoever comes out of the playoff series, outside of very few instances, they're entirely matchup dictated, and even then, you have to kind of tank yourself.
Yeah.
Like, the Warriors were not a better team than the Mavericks in 2007, but the Mavericks also nosedived into those matchups.
Like, right. Absolutely. Avery just
did a terrible job coaching in that series. Not to throw him completely under the bus, and the players panicked as well. But general...
Not to pull a Darren Williams, but...
Right. In general, 9 out of 10 times, whoever comes out of an NBA playoff series, that's the better team.
Right.
And so we get very legitimate champions. Even if sometimes I feel like they weren't the best team overall, you could say that at the time they were definitively the better team, and the 7-game series really helps with that. But I did enjoy the fact because I felt like there was this whole thing of amongst experts of the Ravens aren't that good. And then they beat the Colts. They beat the Colts, but they're not going to beat the Broncos. And bear in mind, I very much love the Ravens because they beat the Broncos. I'm a Chiefs fan living in Colorado.
Right.
So that was pretty much like, I was trying not to say anything, but I'm just like walking around like, oh, are you sad?
That's a lie. You were trolling on Twitter so hard.
Is that, well, yeah, but in person, I was I thought the line was a little high, it was a rough loss, Yeah, it turns out, and it's funny because the Broncos fans' reaction is like, well, you're a Chiefs fan. And I was like, exactly. You're in the mire with us. The entire AFC West is terrible. We're all in hell. That's my reaction because I have nothing in terms of football support at this point in my life. But I just felt like continuously people were just underestimated, especially certain metrics really underestimated the Ravens, so they had no chance. And I was like, but they can throw the deep ball and they have a good defense.
Right.
I was like, why are they just – why can't they win? So we spent a lot of time talking about football, which transitioned into the sport we actually cover.
Speaking of big guys, Jared Solinger. The hits keep coming for the Celtics.
Oh, man. Friday, Jared Solinger winds up going out with back surgery. The timeline's kind of interesting because there's a quote from Danny Ainge that says that he found out about it Friday morning.
Yeah.
And Courtney Lee told reporters, yeah, Doc told us on Thursday at shoot around.
I feel like Danny Ainge has just been like busy playing Call of Duty or something, and like he'll play Call of Duty for like 7 or 8 hours at night and then like check his phone in the morning. It's like, oh crap.
I feel like Danny Ainge just says things because he knows that the media is going to report it and there will be no consequences for him.
Yeah.
Like, he's got so much clout there that it doesn't matter. I'm not saying that he's been bad, he's been very good, but. He did say he has confirmed that he did know. They knew very early that surgery was going to have to probably be made, and it was just a matter of when. And
right.
I guess when Rondo went down, and he had the back spasm. Was like, all right, it's enough.
And that's the thing that Chad Ford pointed out on Twitter immediately after the news is like that was the red flag on Solinger, which he reminded us the red flag on Solinger during the draft was he had the back issue, like that's what came up in the physicals and. And now here you go. It's kind of not the exact same, but with like DeJuan Blair, you know, the knee injuries were, or the knee issue was like a big red flag going into the draft. He's probably like a top 20 pick otherwise. And everyone's just waiting for his knee to explode, right? Like, yeah. even now, it's been years, but you still feel like, hey, you still get the ACL kind of, like, he doesn't have ACLs, you know, he could dislocate his knee at any time and blah, blah, blah. And that seems to be, like, the thing. Like, with Royce White, the red flag was his anxiety disorder, and that's been something people have, you know, really latched onto because of what's happened with him. And then with Darrell Arthur, didn't he have a kidney problem?
Think so.
And people were kind of waiting for that to come to light. DeJuan Blair, the knees, Jared Sollinger, the back. It's weird. Like, you get those kind of mid to late first round guys who have these red flags, and at a certain point you just wait for it to explode, in a sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. His back issue along with Blair's knee, it's kind of like I'm watching Breaking Bad, and it's kind of like when's Hank gonna find out?
Right.
It's like the whole time, of course, you know. But yeah, so that's the whole thing is you're waiting for it to occur. It's interesting because there's this really weird back and forth because you never there's the initial reaction from very mean people is to be like, "Well, told you, like that was his red flag. Yeah. Like, you should have known better." And it's the Celtics fan responses or the human responses to be like, "Well, no, he could have been fine. You don't know these things,
right?
You don't
exactly.
Know. He worked really hard. He played really well. I had him mid to late first round, and it was not because of the back. I had no insight on the back. I just knew that he was going to get blocked a lot. Like,
yeah, I think if he had come out the year before, everyone thought he was like probably a top five guy. You know, at least top 10.
He showed that he basically, you know, and the Celtics fans were. This is the thing I got into because it was like Celtics fans would I would say something in response to something else, and Celtics fans would be like, "Have you seen how well he's playing?" Like, yeah, he's playing great. I think he's fantastic on this team. Like, he landed where he should. Like,
right, yeah, yeah.
All of his problems were masked by their system and KG. It was perfect. It's also interesting because, and not all of my Twitter followers listen to this podcast, though they should, and not all the podcast people that listen to this podcast follow me on Twitter, though they should, but there's an interesting kind of dynamic where people often say, like, I overreact to things on Twitter. I'm like, that's what Twitter's for. It's like 140 characters. So, like, if I see something, I'm going to put the first thing that goes into my head. If I write something on CBSSports.com, I put some thought into it. Right. I've actually sat down and been like, okay, what does this actually mean? And my initial reaction when Sollinger went down was, all right, now you got to blow it up, right? Like, you lost Rondo. Oh, that's one thing. You just lost arguably maybe your fourth best player. It's time to go.
And yet.
And then I thought more about it.
And yet, 4-0.
Or not, you're about yesterday to beat the Clippers.
It's weird. They're just
Paul Pierce dagger.
Yeah, they're just making shots. Like we kind of what we talked about the other day. Like I was looking, and they're not fouling as much, or they're not sending their opponent to the free throw line as much, and they are turning the ball over. And I think that's just due to not having Rondo. Even though Rondo, you know, can be sloppy with the ball, having Avery Bradley and Jason Terry bring the ball up is a little bit different. And Paul Pierce has been turning the ball over a ton. But they're really just hitting shots.
The execution is really good because they got so many veterans. I saw that play yesterday. I flipped out about it on Twitter because there's this play where they do a handoff with KG, a handoff to Pierce, on ball screen, comes around, he comes back over, back around the screen. Butler goes to trap Pierce, which is what you should do because his handle's been weak. Dish to Garnett, forces DeAndre Jordan to step up to contest on the pass, swing pass to Terry. Terry comes back around, and at the very moment that Pierce comes to get the ball, Garnett slips the screen. Jordan's caught in no man's land, and Griffin's too far wide to recover.
Yeah.
Snap pass to Garnett for a dunk, and it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing basketball. But I've said this repeatedly about the Celtics. The worse they get, the better they play. And I have to ask you this question. Are they more like the cloud in Fifth Element or the red slime in Ghostbusters 2?
I think that's a hell of a question. That's maybe the hardest question I've ever been asked. I gotta go with cloud. And here's the reason why. I feel like if you sang your love is taking me higher around them, they wouldn't break apart. They would get into that. But if you keep throwing missiles at them, you keep throwing all of your defense system at them, they're just going to absorb that hatred and get bigger and meaner, and that's kind of what they like. But I think they would break into song, and it wouldn't disrupt what they're doing. I think KG would love to sing on the court.
That's a good point. So LeBron is Mia Jovovich, right?
Oh, of course. That makes Wade Bruce Willis, and Mario Chalmers is Chris Tucker.
Oh, nice.
Is that right?
Green. So now if they're in the finals, I'm just gonna walk around Mario Chalmers going green, get green, baby. So you reported yesterday a rumor deal came out from a pretty good source at Sporting News about a rumor deal of DeAndre Jordan and Eric Bledsoe for Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
Monday morning, the spin machines come out. Clippers deny it. Clippers downplay it. Celtics downplay it. Don't deny that the talks exist, just that the deal's not going to happen.
Right.
Which makes sense. And this is another one of those, you got to read between the lines to understand kind of what's going on. So what this basically means is that two assistant GMs probably called each other, and one of them said, well, would you do this? Not that we would do this, but would you do this?
Yeah.
And they said no. And that's a conversation that actually occurred.
Right. That is reaching out and saying, hey, what about this?
Yeah, to judge value. It's like, well, could you want Eric Bledsoe and DeAndre Jordan? Like, you know, what's it going to take?
You know what it reminds me of? And this is, I'm pretty sure I'm outside this is a bad intro, but I'm pretty sure I'm outside the statute of limitations on this. But back in, like, my first year of college, there was this guy we didn't like, and we were gonna prank him. It was this guy in Sacramento, not where I was going to college. And we were like, over Thanksgiving break, we were gonna like do this thing where we were gonna like wrap up a present of like this lamb's head that you buy from a butcher.
Sure.
But we were trying to figure out if it was illegal, like if that was like vandalism or some kind of law. And so I was walking through campus one day, and there were these two cops sitting around, and so I went up to them. I was like, hey, guys, this isn't happening, but I was also, I mean, I'm very stupid now, but I was an even stupider 19-year-old at the time. I was like, this isn't happening, but let's pretend I was going to give somebody a lamb's head as a prank. Would that be considered a crime? And they're like, well, are you going to throw it at them? I was like, well, I mean, in theory, if this were to happen, no, it's just, like, wrapped up in a present. And they were like, well, no, it's not. I mean, they're like, it's stupid, but it's not a crime. I'm like, okay. So that's kind of like the way the GM talks go. It's like, hey, in theory, hypothetically, if this were to happen, would that be something that we could do?
You should definitely not throw it at them. I badly sprained my ankle when I was a freshman in college.
On a lamb's head?
We're getting there. And then playing basketball, I sprained it. Probably the worst I've ever sprained it. It's still pretty messed up. It's one of those. It still pops because of it. And so, like, it's swollen, but it's the left foot, so I was able to drive home for the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So I drove home. Well, you know where I'm from.
Yeah.
Northwest Arkansas. And you probably are aware of the culture that exists there.
Oh, sure.
So, like, I go to visit my old high school to visit some friends I had that were underclassmen. And this truck comes around the corner. It's like the end of school, so of course the kids are nuts. And this truck comes around the corner squealing, you know, the muffler full blowing. Redneck and three rednecks in the back of the truck yell yee-haw and then throw something. And I'm watching in slow motion as this thing lands and skids and slams into my ankle.
Oh.
And I buckle. I mean, I just it bam and I'm down. I look and there's a deer head staring at me.
Interesting.
I had a redneck throw a severed deer head at my ankle. That's one of my quintessential Harrison, Arkansas stories.
Had it been pulled out like Scorpion in Mortal Kombat, or was it just like a clean cut? Like, was
no,
their spine?
No, they chopped. No, it's like they're dissecting it to get them to, you know, for venison. So it's like jerky, like, you know. But that would be pretty cool if the spine was actually hanging out. I don't know. Yeah. Do deer have spines? You can tell. This conversation has gone weird places.
I would imagine they do have spines. I'm no entomologist. I'm no zoologist.
Entomologist. So So you have a spine. Here's transition. So you have a spine.
Sure.
And I need you to stay strong. I need you to help me with something.
All right.
I need you to talk me off the stupid ledge.
Oh, boy.
You do so many times.
Oh, here we go.
Okay.
Oh, God.
So the Celtics won that game yesterday.
Sure.
And I'm marveling at their ability to play better no matter how the worse they get.
Okay.
And I had to go to the store to get stuff for chili for Super Bowl Sunday. And I'm in the store and I'm wandering around, not getting things that are on the list at all. Not
sure.
Looking at random things like, oh, microwavable fries. Mm.
Oh, God, and that sounds awful.
I start thinking, okay, sidebar, there were these boxes when I was a kid of like microwavable fries that were the most amazing things ever. I used to just pour like salt all over them and eat them. It was amazing. And they came in like little boxes, so it was like perfectly contained. It's perfect. I started thinking to myself, there are two reasons why the Celtics team can't beat the Heat in the playoffs in a first round matchup of 8-1. One is that the Heat are better. That's a pretty self-evident reason.
Yeah.
They are better. Two is LeBron James.
Sure.
Let's for a second, as a thought exercise, let's go beyond that. If we remove those two factors, which you cannot if you're doing an analysis or making a prediction, you can't. But if you remove those two factors of LeBron just taking over, if you take standard LeBron and you pretend that being better doesn't matter because the Celtics beat better teams all the time. I'd argue that the Hawks were better last year and the Sixers played better than them last year and they beat both those teams.
Yeah.
And the Heat were much better. And even though without Chris Bosh, I get that, they were without Avery Bradley and they still pushed them to 7 games. And we had a chance to win in Boston in game 6.
Yeah.
What's the reasoning, even without Rondo and Sullinger, what's the reasoning why the Celtics team can't beat Miami in a first-round series?
Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Ray Allen, Shane Battier, Mario Chalmers.
I get that. Hear me, but here's where I started thinking. Look, Bradley should not be able to defend Dwayne Wade, but he does. He shouldn't be able to. Avery Bradley's a really good defender. He's going to be a defensive player of the year candidate for several years. He's not quite there yet. Celtics fans do not understand that. The gap between Avery Bradley and Tony Allen is really wide, and they don't understand that
yet. Yeah, it's pretty severe. It won't be soon, but it's pretty severe.
But right now, it's very different. They see the stuff like him bodying up Jamal Crawford yesterday, and they think like that's everything, and it's not. There's a lot more that goes into it.
Right.
But he does do a great job on Dwayne Wade. Okay.
Yeah, but here's the thing about that. If Avery Bradley is bodying up Dwayne Wade and is trying to shut down Dwayne Wade, who's chasing shooters on the perimeter?
Courtney Lee.
Uh-huh. Then how are they scoring?
Right. Okay, that's a great question because that's what everyone said yesterday. How are they going to score? What's the entire Celtics plan in the playoffs the last, like, 5 years?
Hopes
make
and dreams.
Make the game as ugly as possible, as unwatchable, as god-awful. Why am I watching this terrible, ugly, unpleasant as possible so that it turns into a slow game that is close with very few possessions at the end and then they out-execute you?
But here's the thing is that without Rondo, at least from what we've seen so far and what it looks like in theory we would see going forward, they are sloppy with the ball. Very sloppy with the ball. And it might not be that severe, but they're going to be one of the lesser teams at taking care of the ball. How does Miami get easy points? They don't play fast, but they turn your turnovers into points.
I'd argue that actually Rondo's turnover rate is by no means bad. But I actually argue that there's, because of the play style, they have to execute such known dynamic things, such like centralized, just based off of like, we're not going to try and outsmart you or really make a smart basketball play. We're just going to do things. We're going to operate very efficiently in the movements that we make that actually could help cut down on those turnovers.
But that's the thing is they don't have someone to bring the ball up the court. They don't have someone to get them into their sets. That's why Paul Pierce is having to do so much. And he's doing a good job, but he's also averaging like 4.5 turnovers during this 4-game win streak. And I think that Miami is so good, not just LeBron, but they're so good at poking the ball away and turning that into an easy basket or a good transition. And the Celtics are one of the worst transition defense teams in the league this year. That's the problem I have, is that disconnect, that could lead to just enough points to where it wouldn't be an issue.
That's a really good argument. You're starting to talk me off the ledge. I will say this. So going into last year's series, I was like, look at the Celtics' offense. They've been horrific versus the Sixers. They were terrible against the Hawks.
Yeah.
They were really bad in the regular season. They play Miami, and their first three games, even in two losses, I think they posted something like a 108 offensive efficiency.
Okay.
Like, an offense that is horrible suddenly started producing points against Miami. Garnett's loathing of that team, the Celtics' flat-out denial of the fact that Miami is the preeminent team in the league, I think really spurs them to be able to counter things which should occur. And so I wonder if the turnovers thing could change.
I mean, maybe it could, but...
We're talking about could. I recognize that we're doing it. Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, I want to make this very clear. If the playoffs started tomorrow and it was a 1-8 matchup and you said you have to pick, I'm picking Heat and 6 and not looking back.
Yeah, I don't think Miami rolls them by any means. I think Boston can ugly up the game. I just don't think they could win 4 out of 7 games.
I just keep thinking of, without Sellinger they can't rebound. Yeah, but the Heat can't rebound either. And, Chris Bosh really killed him last year. And it's, yeah, do you really want to bank on Chris Bosh versus Kevin Garnett over and over and over again? I feel like eventually Garnett's going to start winning that matchup.
I think you do for the simple, and you know me, I love KG, but I think I would take Bosh in that matchup because Bosh's responsibilities are less. Mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't have to do nearly as much as KG does. Now, he still has to do a lot. He's actually been very central to that defense so far this year because he is playing center much like KG does for Boston. And so with that comes, with great responsibilities comes great rewards. Or I think I just mixed up Spider-Man and Summer Catch, which I tend to do. I think that because Bosh is just a safety valve and KG has to be a little bit more than that, especially in a series like that, that's the disconnect where I think, well, I'll take the guy who doesn't have to do as much throughout a 7-game series.
Okay. All right, I'm off the ledge.
Are you good? We can go get some ice cream now. You're not going to jump.
I'm not going to jump. I just, the Celtics team makes me crazy because, things that should, I basically had to reverse my logical thinking. It's like, well, if A, then B. And with the Celtics, it's if A, then not B. Yeah. Not B at all.
Right.
So I'm having to.
That's kind of the fun thing about them.
Yeah, it's fun. I would agree. It does make them very, very fun. Yesterday was kind of an interesting situation. I was the only person on Twitter, which means I was wrong. I'm willing to admit that. That didn't think the decision not to foul was terrible.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing. I don't know that it's a universal rule, if that makes sense, you know?
I think it's very much like the foul to give.
Yeah.
Which is like, Carl said this the other day about foul to give. He said, it's really easy to say that you should do it. It's very much different to actually tell your guys to go out there and do it because of all the things that can go wrong that you're worried about.
Right. No, that's a valid concern. And that kind of gets into the conversation of, at the end of the game, do you run ISO or do you run a play? Well, less can go wrong. Like, you're getting a shot most, like, 9 times out of 10 if you run ISO.
Right.
And it's kind of like you give yourself a chance to do something without making it too complicated. And yep. And the foul to give can be similar to that. Yeah, I don't know that it validates a decision either way, if it works or doesn't work. I really think it's just a scenario-by-scenario basis. And often I would probably foul, but there are times where you probably think, I'd like to see our guys get a stop.
Yesterday's situation was interesting because I look at and there are a couple lines of thought, which is, the first is like a Boston fan saying, like, that's Pierce and that's what he does. But it's like, well, I hadn't done that this year. And two, Barnes didn't let him get to the elbow. He took a step back three, which is way outside of his range and a shot that he's missed a ton this year. Like, Pierce has been wretched in these kind of situations this season. So you kind of like the look. And the second thought is, well, even if he misses, you got to get the ball, call timeout, and inbound, and they've got a foul to give. My argument was, if they're inbounding, they're doing catch and shoot. Basically, they're going to get 1 to 2 seconds left on the clock if he misses.
Yeah.
Provided it's not like a super long, high arcing rebound.
Right.
It doesn't hit back iron and it just like takes 2 seconds to fall. If it comes off in a standard rebound, which Pierce's shots sometimes do, you get the rebound, call timeout, you've got 1 point, you've got 1 to 2 seconds to basically get Jamal Crawford in a catch and shoot situation. If you try and foul there, Crawford's probably drawing the four point play.
Yeah, he's pretty good at that.
Yeah, that's what he does. So I really like your situation there. And I just felt like there are times when you want to extend the game. Like against the Denver Nuggets, always extend the game.
Right.
They can't hit free throws. Always do it because there's a good chance they're going to miss. There are other teams that you really feel like, you know, hey, you know, depending on who you get. I don't feel like the Celtics are one of those. It's a bunch of guys that have a lot of savvy. Even Courtney Lee, somebody mentioned, was like an option to foul. You know, he's 88% from the line, but has only taken, like, I think 42 attempts this year. Even then, I don't like that idea. Those are guys that have big-time experience, and I don't like those guys on the line.
Yeah, you mentioned the Nuggets at the end of the game. It's not often this year, but whenever the Wolves get into a – they're getting fouled to extend the game, and they've got to go to the free throw line, I'm just like, oh, no. This is going to be awful.
Well, and, like, with the Wolves, it's one where you have to know the team that you're facing. Like, if you're down three, don't foul. Like, you'd rather them shoot fouls or you'd rather them shoot three-pointers than fouls.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was kind of an interesting situation. We're in later on time, but I do want to kind of talk about – maybe we'll do this as, like, a theme this week. Maybe
okay.
We'll talk a little bit about what we've learned so far in the season. And I watched the Rockets last week, so I kind of wanted to start with this one today. I learned that Tony Douglas really is a good NBA player now.
It's weird.
Isn't it?
I mean, he was – He's along that kind of Grievous Vasquez line, only he had different expectations coming in. Is he really didn't look like he didn't belong in the league anymore last year. And he was really bad, and you saw this a lot with when Kevin McHale was away from the team and Kelvin Sampson was coaching them this year. He would go to Douglas in the fourth quarter a lot. It's just like, why are you doing this? Like, this is Tony Douglas. What are you doing? But he's been really good. Like, he makes you pay as a shooter. He's taking care of the ball. He's just making good decisions, and he's still a good defender on top of that. Like, he's one of those rare guards who are just like kind of tenacious and annoying as a defender. And
the big thing is, you know, in New York, he was the defender that made those plays. It was like, oh, big steal, and everyone's like, oh, I love Tony Douglas. But then the basketball heads would watch him, and it's like, oh, man, he missed, like, four rotations in one play. Like,
yeah.
You know, he would just be awful in all the other areas. He doesn't do that. Like, right. He's just a good defender.
Yeah, he's just solid now, and he's really become a good player. And it's something that's still kind of weird to get used to because, yeah, I mean, you know me, I'm dead inside. I have no feelings, so I try to like, be as patient as possible and just be like, look, let's see if this guy's actually good now. Like, let's not react to a month or 2 months of basketball. It's kind of figured out. But with him, you don't see any real flashes that he's making up for, like flashes of incompetence. Like, he's just been good all year and hasn't really shown any of those weak tendencies that he did before.
I bag on the Rockets hard for letting go of Sean Livingston when they had Tony Douglas around. It was like, you kept Tony Douglas instead of trading him. And you did Sean Livingston. But that's turned out to be the absolute right move. He's just been fantastic. And that's been a really, really, really big thing. I think we're learning. We definitely learned that Kyrie Irving's rookie year was not a fluke.
No, he is. Oh, man.
Your video yesterday was amazing, by the way.
Thank you.
If you have a chance, go to Ion Basketball. Watch Zach's video he put together of Kyrie Irving put you on an island. It's
really stupid. It's one of the dumber things.
It's amazing.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever done, and that's saying something, because I've made a lot of really awful photoshops.
You went up to a cop and asked him if you could give a guy a lamb's head, so yeah.
Wasn't my idea.
That's the thing.
That wasn't my idea. They knew I was stupid enough to execute it.
You were just doing background research.
Just background research, and it was a fun time.
So that's two things that I think we've learned. Kyrie Irving's amazing. It's just like, you know.
Oh, let me ask you this question, because I got into this really dumb argument with Cavs fans yesterday. Just a couple of Cavs fans, not all Cavs fans. They said, if you added an all-star to this team, would they make the playoffs? And I said, no. I said, I think they'd be about the 10th best team. And to me, like, you're adding, like, an average all-star, right? Like, that in that conversation, you're not adding LeBron James, you're adding just an average all-star. And then it got into, if they added LeBron, they wouldn't make the playoffs, you're an idiot. It's like, well, that's not what we're talking about. And they're like, well,
he didn't say if they added the best player on the planet.
Yeah, that's what I said. I was like, well, he's the best player on the planet. I'm talking about an average all-star. And they're like, well, like there are reports of LeBron wanting to come to Cleveland when he's a free agent. And I was like, oh, really? I hadn't heard. I just cover basketball for a living.
People get really irritated when I pull that card, too. They think I'm being, like, condescending. I am. It's just irritating.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm absolutely being condescending, but good God, like, that's my job. Like, that's what we're supposed to do.
Like, you didn't talk to me about anything, and I'll be very interested in what you have to say. Like, I'm very interested in many fields, but professional basketball is one where I got a pretty good handle on stuff, guys.
If it's a trade rumor from, like, that afternoon, you're like, hey, have you heard about this? Yeah, there's a good chance I haven't heard about it. If it's something that's been talked about for weeks and that I've written about, there's a chance that I've heard, that I know about it.
Right.
But it was like, well, yeah, but there are talks about LeBron wanting to come to Cleveland. I was like, right, but like, if we're reasonably talking, a guy who has 2 years left on his contract is not going to be put on this team. And that's the thing. Like, this team is not good enough. If you added, let's say Al Horford. If you added Al Horford to the Cavs, I still don't think they're a playoff team. And Al Horford's a very good player. This team is just terrible.
Like with Verjo or without Verjo?
I guess without. With Verjao, maybe they make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's like with Verjao, it's like, the problem might be 8 seed.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you're adding Verjao back to the mix, are you adding Rondo back to the Celtics? You know, like, I don't know. Like, that's the problem with these hypothetical worlds, is I don't really know where we draw the line.
I will say, I had a big argument with Conrad from Fear of the Sword about...
You? Him? Sure. Are you in? That doesn't sound right.
About... Because I went into the season, and I said this team is worse than last year, and he thought that was insane. Mostly because like Cavs fans are really damaged over Antoine Jameson last year.
Yeah,
like he really hurt them in big ways, and it wasn't his fault. But they are damaged over him.
By the way, talked to him the other night after the Lakers Wolves game. Couldn't be a nicer guy.
Such a nice guy.
Oh my God, I almost feel bad about making fun of him when he plays.
Yeah. It's Vince Carter's the same way. I was like, oh my gosh.
He was unbelievably nice. Man. But yeah, keep going. Sorry.
I would say, Cavs fans would chime in on these arguments and say, you can't say that this team is worse than last year. And I would be like, why? Last year I had Antoine Jameson. And I'm always like, 10-year veteran in the NBA, quality, decent. Okay. Not a completely horrible shooter. Bad defender, but at least knows where he is on the floor. I'm sorry. This is not Antoine Jameson is not the reason why this team is better. But I really didn't like the direction. The biggest problem going in with the Cavs was I didn't like the fact that everything depended on Deion Waiters. That was their entire structure.
Yeah, that's fair.
If Deion Waiters is the player we think he's going to be, we're going to be very good. And then Deion Waiters was the player everyone else thought he was going to be, and they're not very good.
Right.
And he's getting better, and there's... The jury's out. You can make an argument either way on Deion Waiters at this point. And I hope he puts it together. I hope young players always put it together. I hope the best for young players.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's another thing. It's like, other than Mike Bibby and probably Matt Barnes, there isn't a player out there that I hate. Mm-hmm. And I don't want guys... Like, usually when I'm criticizing a guy, it's because I want them to be better. Like, you want them to be better so you can celebrate, like, how good they are.
I will say Reggie Evans just bugged me. I don't hate him. He just bugged me.
Yeah, I mean, there are annoying players. But guys like, because, the word hate is just so misused now that it just becomes this thing of, like, I don't hate this guy. Like, I actually want him to be better. I want him to do well. Like, when I criticize Ricky Rubio not being able to make a jumper, it's not because I'm reveling in the fact that he can't hit a jumper. It's that I want him to be a good shooter, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's the thought process. It's like, I don't dislike this guy. I want him to be better.
So we'll see how the Cavs kind of put it together. But I will say I think this team is better than last year now after the Grizzlies trade because, Ellington and Spates are giving them just enough.
Finally have some depth. I mean, yeah. Not much, but a little bit. And that's my problem is that Irving isn't good enough yet. Like, don't get me wrong, he is fantastic. Like, you get into a close game with that guy in a fourth quarter, he switches into this just, like, assassin. Like, he's just incredible, and I love that about him. The problem is he's not quite good enough yet to make every game get close into the fourth quarter, which is really unreasonable to expect out of a second year guy anyway.
20-year-old.
Yeah, so it's not this isn't criticism. It's just me trying to be realistic about him, saying like he's not there yet. He will be. And because he's not at that point where he can make every game close, that's where he needs depth and teammates around him who can do it. Tristan Thompson looks a lot better. He looks like a pretty decent player now. Still would take Valanciunas over him, but he's pretty solid the last month and a half. And other than that, I'm just looking at that roster. I'm like, ugh. There's not like I like Alonzo G as a role player, but he's not really someone you have to have. Spates and Ellington give them, you know, a little bit of depth that they needed, but there's just not enough talent on this team. There's not enough talent on this team to make Kyrie Irving like a guy who can win you games every night.
And hopefully Chris Grant will put that around him.
Yeah, I mean, I like the direction they're headed. I think in 2 years they're probably going to be really good.
No, I have concerns, but you know, we'll have to see how this draft and free agency goes.
Sure.
That's where I come to. I feel like, you know, I do feel like maybe they should have gone ahead and busted the bank to try and move up last year.
But, yeah, maybe.
So, yeah, let's talk about some games.
Yeah, we got games tonight. I will be at one of them in the never-ending March through February where the Timberwolves are at home every night.
That's how I was in January. You and Royce both have games Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Yeah.
So I'm working a lot of nights this week.
Yeah.
So expect a lot of stupid gifts is the answer. So that translates.
And really, that's the way CBS wants to come off the Super Bowl coverage.
Right. Welcome to NBA season, stupid gifts. The Wizards are only getting 3 at home versus the Clippers, which shows you kind of how the Clippers are melting down without Chris Paul.
Yeah.
I looked it up and posted on Twitter a while ago. So last week, an NBA player said to me, "Hey, when's Chris Paul going to be back?" And I said, "Well, probably not for a while. This is the break he always takes every year." And this player said, "A break? I don't think." And he stopped and, "Hey, you're right. You're right. He does take a little break." And well, yeah, he rests himself. Like, I think it's good. I'd rather Chris rest himself in January and February and March than, you know, be exhausted and worn down in April. He needs to be ready to kill in the first round.
So, the NBA needs to find Chris Paul.
Right.
Find him for taking this break.
Nah, I think they need to find him if he tries to play. Like, it's fine. You guys have the Clippers have enough of a buffer. They're not going to fall farther than 5. So,
yeah. And I think they've shown that they're probably a team that it doesn't really matter where they end up in the West. Like, they're dangerous regardless.
The Wizards and Hornets are very similar. They're kind of twins in conferences in which they were terrible, they were horrible, they were inexcusably bad, they got their best player back, they really improved for a while, and now they're kind of regressing as teams adjust, and how they respond here is a big pivotal moment for their seasons.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Hornets Saturday night, and they just got destroyed by the Wolves, which was...
That was a win they needed. Williams was clearly... Yeah. He was accepting of the Denver loss because they played a little bit better. They hung for a while. Really wanted to get that one despite it being on back to back. They also practiced, you know, shoot around on Friday.
Yeah,
and they practiced for I think 2 hours.
My God,
yeah, because they took an off day on Thursday, and they knew they were gonna be able to practice because of the back to back. So they shot her. They did the long practice, played in Denver, couldn't get that one. Did the back-to-back in Minnesota, and that was like an opportunity for him, and just got killed. It was just a rough turn for him. They got to stabilize a little bit.
Yeah, and they were, they looked just listless, you know? Like, yeah. They really, it was weird because the previous night, I don't know, I mean, I'm sure it's happened before, but it's just weird. Like, Friday night, Lakers, Wolves are down 29 at one point. The next night, they're up 29. Like, that was a weird turnaround.
They're a weird team in general.
Yeah, trust me.
Yeah. With the Wizards, you know, Beal's hurt and obviously damages them. It's interesting to me with teams like the Hornets and the Raptors, a theme this year has been good defensive coaches are coaching terrible defensive teams.
Yeah, it's weird.
And trying to understand it's very difficult because anybody that's watched the coaches for more than you know, a few months is going to be like, you know, is really perplexed because these are really good defensive teams. You know, Monty Williams' defensive principles for the Hornets are terrific. His players just cannot execute.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's honestly, I would say, killing him a little bit inside. So here's a little insider story for you, listeners. I was going to do this big feature on Gervis Vasquez, and I was actually going to kind of do it the same way I did the Iguodala thing, where I pulled some plays and was going to have him walk me through making the play. You know, because he's the league leader in assists now that Rondo's out. He's the league leader in assists and assist percentage. And so I was like, okay, well, what's going on? And then I looked up Monty Williams' comments from the game before, from like Wednesday, and it was specifically talking about players with empty stats who aren't defending.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, this is going to be awkward. You know, and Hornets PR was nice enough to give me some time with Monty Williams at shoot around, because shockingly, shockingly, New Orleans media was nowhere to be found.
What?
It's almost like they had something else to do. And let's just say Monty comes from the Popovich school very much. And yeah. There is no talking. And he comes over and he's like, make it quick. And I was like, okay. And I was like, all right, so let me get this straight. I got make it quick with a player that he's obviously not in a good situation with.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, Grievous is just another player. But he did say, you know, he's got a lot of responsibility and he's played well. But we need him to be better. He's got a lot of room for improvement.
I believe
so that was like the first kind of hit to my narrative that I was building.
Yeah.
And then Vasquez shot around for most of media availability, finally comes in and immediately goes to Chapel. And like my piece just like complete destruction.
I had a similar, well, kind of, not really similar, but I went pregame to Wolves Hornets, and I was thinking, like, I'll do something on Anthony Davis. Well, he was out there for the majority of the warm-up, and so I went out there, and I checked, and I told him, I was like, hey, if, you know, Anthony Davis comes off the court, will you come find me? I'm going to go, like, eat in the media room. And they're like, yeah, sure, no problem. And then I ran into to Jim Peterson, the Wolves color commentator. And he was like, hey, you want to go eat? And so, hey, I get to go eat with Jim Peterson. That's awesome. So we hung out for, I don't know, maybe a half hour, 40 minutes. And the guy, I ran into the guy later, and he's like, oh, hey, you know, Davis was on the court most of the time, and then he was in the trainer's room, so you wouldn't have gotten to talk to him anyway. I was like, oh, it's no big deal. I will just get him after the game. And then it was a 29-point blowout, and like, that's one of those, especially with a Monty Williams team, you just don't want to go into the locker room. You don't. Like, you're not going to get anything. And that's a weird thing.
I make
like,
it a rule, and this is, you know, until we get to the playoffs and the games matter, I only go to the winning locker room.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't go. There's no point because the guys are in too foul of a mood. And to me, actually, it's kind of nice. I like the fact that these guys get paid millions of dollars no matter what. They play 82 games a year, and yet most of the time, not always, but most of the time, if they lose, they are really pissed off.
Yep.
I think that's something that I think a lot of people don't know is you go into a locker room after a loss, and it is palpable. Nobody is – and they're not faking. It's not even just like a politeness or like a keeping up appearances thing. Like, there is a definite vibe.
Yeah. Like and Friday night, there, you know, it was the Lakers-Wolves, and Lakers – we're blowing them out for most of the game. It came back and was close, and then they ended up winning by 11, I believe. And so I went to the Lakers locker room afterwards and had to wait around a long time, but got to talk to Kobe. He's a jerk, but I can identify with the personality a little bit. So I really enjoyed talking to him. He was in a good mood, so that helped, but I really enjoyed talking to him.
He's honestly really great with the media. Yeah. Like he makes, you know, he'll say certain things or make fun of stupid questions, but I also, for my big thing is, look, he talks every game.
Yeah, he talks every game, and he got into, like, this thing, like, someone asked him about if he had talked to Magic Johnson since, like, he went through, like, that assist run, and he said he hadn't talked to him yet, but then he started, like, talking about Magic Johnson and all these, like, point guards and different aspects of their game and stuff, and it was just a fun conversation. I really enjoyed talking to Kobe. I like Kobe. I really do. I don't know why people hate him so much. No, I do know why people hate him so much, but I still like him.
Wolves favored – I'm just going to move on. Wolves favored by 3 at home versus the Chaos Engine, Portland Trailblazers.
I don't feel good about that.
you should not feel good about that.
I don't feel
even
good about
though,
that at all.
Even though the Chaos Engine really only, it usually only shows itself in the fourth quarter of games in Portland, I just, man, I, these are two teams I stay away from. The really, honestly, Portland, Minnesota, Utah, and Utah, those are the three teams they're kind of hanging around in the West that I just cannot trust whenever I'm doing picks. I'm always, so when Portland played Utah twice over the weekend, I was just like, oh God, oh God.
Yeah.
I got them both wrong. Missed them both.
The big thing about the Wolves Blazers matchup, Wes Matthews has become like a wolf hunter. Like, he just destroys them lately. He did it last year. He did it earlier this year. He seems to just, he sees the colors or something, and just his accuracy hones in. There's something about this matchup that I don't really understand, but he'll probably have a big night. A weird thing was last time they played, Batum had a really good game, and Blazers fans were like, oh, see what you're missing with Batum? And I was like, well, yeah, they tried to get Batum. It's not like they didn't, like, do enough. Like, they literally didn't have a chance to get Batum.
Batum's so good this year.
Yes. But I'm also happy with Kirilenko. I actually would rather Kirilenko now, probably, I mean, after Kirilenko's contract's up, I'd clearly rather have Batum. But for this next year or two, I think Kirilenko's a good influence on the team.
Yeah, he's been great. I mean, defensively, he's better than Batum, and Batum is very good. So, yeah. Kirilenko is exactly what they need.
Hey, you want a slop fest tonight?
Bulls-Pacers.
All of your slop.
Lines 5.5. Pacers giving 5.5 to the Bulls. I was kind of surprised.
Wow.
And that's down from it opened at 6.
Giving 5.5.
The over-under is 176.
I still would go under.
Yeah, I did. I went under.
That's not a lot of points.
I went under. I think it's going to be like 84, 81. Like,
yeah.
These are two teams that scrap and claw.
I think you're looking at like a 79-76 game.
Pacers are really inconsistent. They look so good against Miami. I rewatched that game after the Super Bowl last night, and they look so good.
Yeah.
Just, you know, for me, I'm waiting. I feel like I'm hoping this is how the narrative turns out. I'm hoping that everyone that's saying how terrible the decision to re-sign Roy Hibbert was and how he's a bum and he should have never gotten the All-Star because of 3 months of production this year, which is just remarkably stupid. I just feel like, look, you know, Roy Hibbert's not missing jumpers. It's not his jumper's gone. If a guy's jumper leaves him, sometimes it stays gone. Kirk Heiner's jumper left him and never came back.
Yeah.
It left him like a girl running off with a waiter. It's...
Wow.
It never came back.
That was an odd analogy.
You know? Or Manuel, as I tell my wife. I'm always worried about my wife running off with a graduate engineering student named Manuel. That's a joke around my house.
Sure.
So, the Pacers, you know, I just feel like Roy Hibbert eventually is going to start hitting hook shots and little tip-ins. Like, these shots are going to start falling.
Yeah, I believe Tim Donahue had a great post on 8 Points, 9 Seconds of Pacers blog earlier about how Roy Hibbert had a wrist injury and kind of, like, breaking down the difference in that hook because of it. And I don't know if that is the reason. You know, who knows how long until he feels right again. But it doesn't seem like a crazy assessment that could be an issue.
Yeah. It should be a really good matchup tonight. I'm wondering, do you think they're going to do, will they do, like, Rose is coming back this day, and so Adidas can, like, build up commercials and like, time to, I'm serious, to build up, like, time around the stuff, or Thursday night, TNT, I've noticed that teams like to bring guys back on the road. I'm not sure why. I don't really know the reason, but I noticed that a lot of times guys will kind of test it out on the road. I guess maybe because it's sometimes they come off the bench. But wouldn't Thursday on TNT against Denver be a pretty good one? He's not likely to get – he's not facing a very physical team.
Oh, that would be a very good one.
It's fast is the only issue.
Yeah.
The Nuggets are going to push him. But I think that one might be a good one. I feel like with the Rose one, we're to the point where he's practicing – it's not going to be, oh, he's going to return on this day, because the Bulls never say anything about injuries. It's just going to be, you know, we're going to get the tweets from the Chicago guys. Rose is starting tonight.
Yep. I can't wait. I really can't wait for him to be back.
it's really great too, because it's horrible that the injury happened. I got really annoyed at the narrative around him.
Yeah.
I forget how much I really enjoyed watching him play. When you don't try and talk about where he stands with point guards, or, you know, how he stacks up against all these other guys, or whether he's the MVP, or his efficiency versus other guys, if you just watch him play, he's so much fun.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun.
The Pistons are on a back-to-back, and I get that. The Knicks giving 10 at home to them seems a little off. They were in that game yesterday. They've been in most games. Andre Drummond's a beast.
Oh, they almost won the game.
You know, and I mean, it's the Lakers, so I know that it's not really great competition, but they're playing well overall. They've got a lot of things going for them, and I just feel like 10's a really big number for the Knicks at home. But then I'm like, well, the Knicks are much better.
Yeah, the Knicks are just really good at home. I think that, I don't know, I think that's about right. Damn you, Vegas.
Thunder 8.5, Mavericks, that one's pretty self-explanatory. Thunder's going to roll this.
There was a little fight in that Dallas team.
Yeah, but they're not very good, so.
That's true.
The Heat are on a back-to-back. They're at home, but this is a back-to-back game for them, and they're still giving 13.5 to the Bobcats.
I feel like the Bobcats play them well, though.
They do. This Bobcats team is definitively not as terrible as last year's.
Oh, definitely not.
It's probably the best Bobcats team since the playoff run.
They're so good at scoring out of pick and rolls with the ball handler that kind of keeps them hanging around.
Jazz giving 8.5 at home to the Kings. The Jazz have been inconsistent, but I guess at home versus a team that's really in free fall and is just depressing in every single way.
Yeah, I don't like this Kings team on the road ever.
Here's a dangerous one. The Sixers are giving 7.5 to the Magic at home. That's a trap.
I kind of feel like the Magic win that game.
You've been feeling the Magic a little bit.
I have, and
I bagged on him early in the year.
And my assessment was dead on against the Knicks, and it was way off against the Celtics. Way off. They got rolled.
That's because the Celtics are unstoppable.
That's true.
I'm just telling you.
They just needed Rondo out of the way.
The worse they get, the better they play.
Yeah.
I don't think they can lose. It's like, can they lose KG? But I'm also like, yeah, if KG breaks his leg, they're going to win the championship. That's where I'm to at this point.
If KG breaks his leg, he'll still play.
That's true.
We'll have like a varsity blues moment where he's just like, shoot me up. Let's go.
Let's do one trade talk before we go.
Sure.
And that's, reports kind of came out that there's been indication that it's really hard to determine. Mark's.vsbn.com. Nobody's talking about Utah because basically the signals are really mixed. Everything I've gotten from people I've talked to in my ultra-connected manner, not at all, I know like four people, but still, the people I've talked to, the indication is every time you talk to them, it's something different. It's, well, you know, we might trade Millsap, or, well, you know, Jefferson might get more value, or, look, we might just keep both of them and see what happens, or, well, you know, if we got the right offer for Derek Favors, I mean, everything. It just changes every time you talk to him.
Yeah.
I very much want them to trade Paul Millsap. I feel like Favors and Jefferson is a really good combo. You bring Kenner off the bench. Even if you want to move on entirely from Jefferson, I'm fine with that. Let Al go in free agency and he can go sign somewhere and be an impact player. I'd really love to see him sign with Dallas, honestly. Like if Dwight re-signs with LA, I would love to see them give Al Jefferson a high offer that's not max and pair him with Dirk. I think they'd be really great. Defensively, there'd be some issues, but I really like the offense.
Yeah.
You know, they got some options, but I really want Paul Millsap because I wrote about this over the weekend. I feel like he's a guy that goes to a near contender and makes them into not a contender, but one of the teams in the conversation. He can take a team that's in, say, like Milwaukee territory, not to say that he should get traded to Milwaukee, but a team in that range, and push them into like a Grizzlies area where it's like just on the outside.
That's, yeah, I think that's fair. I think as long as he's not the main guy or like the second guy, he's just a devastating addition. Like just will really boost your team.
I feel like it's one where,
God,
we always talk about 1, 2, 3, right? Like either your three guys or fourth best player. There's also some teams and really successful ones, it's like a 1 and then 2A and 2B. I want Millsap as a 2B.
Yeah. I actually really like the idea of him on the Bucks now that you mentioned it.
You pair him with Sanders?
Yeah. Him and Sanders, and you've got, I mean, I don't know who you'd give up. You'd probably just give up young guys, but. Or what if, I mean, what if they gave up Monte?
I like Millsap either on the now that you mentioned the Bucks actually are a pretty good one. I actually really like Millsap on Denver.
Sure.
Really, I've been on this one all year. He covers so many areas of concern for them.
Sure.
Like, they don't need rebounding help, but they do need, like, tough play inside and the ability to stretch the floor. I mean, he fits really well.
Yeah.
You know, a Ty Lawson, either Danilo Gallinari or Iguodala, Paul Millsap, you know, Kosta Kuvas / JaVale, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good rotation.
I particularly like Lawson, Iguodala, and Millsap, but it's one where that's like, oh, that's a really good team, but I think Denver's like, yeah, but it's not going to win a championship, so why would we bother?
Right. So. Such is life in the NBA.
Such is life in the NBA. There's our name of our podcast. Such is life in the NBA. Zach, sorry about your Niners. Better luck next year.
Oh, it's all right. Now I get to turn my focus to the Timberwolves before I turn my focus to the Braves, and just disappointment all year round. I'm used to it.
Life is misery. Have a good day, people.
Thanks, Matt.